Toasties, welcome to Pyro Toasty Talks podcast, where we're chatting about all things pyrography and art and running a small business as an artist. Today is episode 12, and today's topic is how to stay in love with your art. As always, we have the ever charming David and Renee in Pennsylvania joining us. And say hi, David and Renee.
Hey.
Howdy.
Howdy.
And here in North Carolina, we have myself, Brian, and Zona of BZ Furfur. Say hi, Zona.
Hello.
And let's get right to it. So how do you stay in love with art?
I think most artists will agree that at this time of the year, especially if they've been doing it all year round and just, you know, the grind of making product and coming up with product and markets and themes and all this, by the time they get around to this part of the year, which is the end of the year, which is ironically enough where you should really be thinking about it because fourth quarter and this is where everybody starts buying stuff for Christmas. I think at this point, you're just so exhausted that you're burned out. I need a break. But you can't really take a break right now because
you got to make the money.
Exactly. Because now is the time.
Now's the time to sell, people. Yep. I know.
Christmas. Christmas gifts. People are more willing to spend money on, you know, on higher priced items because Christmas gift. Right. I mean, think about it. Throughout the year, what do we got? We got like what gift giving holidays throughout the year. Right.
We've got quarter one, Valentine's Day. That's it. Quarter two. You got Mother's Day, you have Easter, and
Father's Day.
Father's Day. And then quarter three, quarter four, you got
all the good ones.
All the good ones.
Yeah. All the big ones. All the big ones are in quarter four.
Yeah.
You know, so it's...
So I guess you got nothing. You have nothing in quarter three.
But I mean, the whole point is like throughout the year, every other quarter, right? One through three, what, like, even those holidays are just kind of like, people aren't thinking about spending a whole ton of money on those. I mean, there's anniversaries and birthdays, but even then, it's like compared to Christmas. Like Christmas, they might be willing to spend $300-$400, where like the other holidays are like maybe $100-$200, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be thinking about spending that kind of money. So like for an artist, any small business, now is the time where we're gearing up for the big stuff. I mean, theoretically, we should be doing this all year round, but here we are. We're always behind the eight ball. You know, and you just get burnt out. So how do you stay in love with art? Like, how do you stay in love with the business? How do you stay in love with the job?
It's hard. So, like, okay, wrapping up the whole year and how to stay in love with it, you have to plan. You have to have some kind of plan for yourself, I think, is the number one thing ahead of time, you know, because you are trying to avoid the burnout. You're trying to avoid the stressy, depressy post-winter season, you know, like if you want to avoid those things, then let's plan ahead of time. How are you going to make your sales? Where are you going to make your sales? Are you doing in-person markets? Are you changing your product line? Are you even making product, you know? And when you plan things out ahead of time, you have the ability to plan in your empty space, your break time, your vacation time. When you're not living in the week to week, month to month panic of just survival mode, just trying to make money. Okay, what do I do now? What do I do now? What do I post? Okay, now what's next? You know, once you get out of that cycle and you can step back and breathe, that is a huge, huge factor in your overall like satisfaction with your art and your process and your business and whatever. But a lot of us aren't in that space, or we have fallen out of that headspace or whatever. So it's like, okay, well, planning ahead doesn't really help me right now, Renee. So what do you do? It's going to be different for everyone. But personally, for me, I have found other art practices to be very helpful. So, like, yes, I love wood burning and I wood burn just about all the time, but I have also recently picked up drawing and sketching. And, like, I feel like that is something that not a lot of us pyrographers do, at least not that I see on social media. I don't know anybody else who has a sketchbook. or who actually uses a sketchbook. I don't know anyone else who sits down and sketches out their ideas in a book or just brings a sketchbook with them or even just like practices doodles. But for me, I have this big, it's like 16 by 12. It's big. It's a big sketchbook. And I have started filling that thing up with all sorts of ridiculous doodles and handwriting and sketches. And it's been really freeing because I'm not focusing on an end product and I'm not focusing on trying something new with wood burning and, quote, wasting a piece of wood if it goes wrong. Because a lot of us, when we're wood burning, you know, we might have an idea, we've never done it before, we want to try this new kind of art, and we might use a piece of wood and then feel like we wasted it because it didn't come out right, or now I ruined it, or it's ugly, or I don't like it, you know? So having a sketchbook allows you to just play without worrying about wasting materials or wasting time or wasting money or whatever. And no one else has to see it. And if you really don't like it, you just turn the page.
Like, and that's a good point. Just turn
the page. You just turn the page.
I hear you. So
are you saying... Are you saying that when the hobby becomes the business, something else needs to become the hobby?
For me, yes. For my sanity, yes. But I also have ADHD, so I need a lot of different outlets for my various energy levels and my various moods that I may be in. So, like, for a while there, I was really into crochet. And then I fell out of crochet and I haven't touched my crochet stuff in over a year. And then I was back into crochet and I got all of these little, I was into that for a hot minute and then I fell out of it. And, but like a lot of my stuff is still, like right now, at least for the last couple of years, it has still been really focused on wood burning, but just different avenues of it. Expanding my skills as an artist in ways that I can incorporate them into my regular art practice. So like, yes, the sketching has been really good, but I have also gotten into like loose watercolors on wood and playing with that, because usually I like, you know, my very vibrant, very crisp lines and stuff, but it has been really freeing to just do loose florals on wood and playing with that. I've pulled out my acrylics again. I've pulled out my dotting materials, like my dot mandala tools. That has been so fun. I have pulled out my gouache, like really just playing with things that I usually wouldn't if I was stuck in, I just have to make product, because then there's no time for play. But I have to have time for play or else I am burnt out within 10 minutes. Like, I have to have play.
Do you think that the kind of the grind of posting on social media, having to do all of the marketing for the business, do all of the extra stuff surrounding making a name for yourself, cuts into your passion for the art?
Absolutely.
1,000%.
Absolutely. I hate social media. I'm sure I've said this in other episodes before, and you and I have talked about this personally, Zona. Mm-hmm. I hate social media so much. I feel like I can be good at it if I really pour energy and time and mental effort into actually having a social media strategy and using it to my advantage or whatever. But when I don't, I am just drowning in it. And it sucks the life out of me having to plan, how am I going to make sales? Okay, let me just take a step back. For me, the way I see it is we have an exclusively online business for our wood supplies. We don't have a brick and mortar location. We don't have any other way to make sales. We have to be online. And the number one way we have a name for ourselves online is through social media. So social media is a non-negotiable. In this day and age, almost 2025, like it is a non-negotiable. There is no way to drive sales to your domain name, your website, without social media and SEO and some kind of online marketing strategy. So, like, I have to do social media, but how I do it is up to me. Okay, so it's like, all right, well, I have to do this thing because I'm damned if I do, but I'm damned if I don't. So how can I make it work for me? But I have yet to find a good mental balance between my time spent thinking about social media, planning social media, picking the images for an aesthetic feed, but also trying to connect with my people and being on brand. And for me, if it was a job, okay, so like I applied to this job. I don't know if I'll hear back from them, but I applied to this job as a social media manager because it's for someone else, it's for someone else's business, and if they have specific goals that they're trying to achieve in their business, I have no problem being like, yep, here's a social media post, here's the wording, like I'm good at the branding, I'm good at these things, and I know that I could do it if I'm getting paid for it for someone else. So I would be a really good social media manager for somebody else. Having to come up with all of the brain power myself for me, and it is like either I eat or I don't, that pressure is what gets me. So I hate social media, but I'm good at it, but I suck at it, but I'm good at it. I'm really good at it. I'm good at graphic design. I'm good at, but I hate it so much for me.
You know, back to the question about what do I do as an artist to stay in love with my art, and now that I made my hobby my job, do I need another hobby to replace that? Honestly, no. For me, I still burn and I still create wood burns, but I don't burn. I found that if I burn for myself, if I just make something that I want, you know, and Brian will be like, well, oh, how much are we going to sell that for? I was like, we're not selling it. I made it for me because I like it, because I want to keep it. And he goes, oh, I'm like, yeah, Miawaka, I made for me, because it's a freaking white cat and I love cats, you know, but I made that for me. Floral owl, I do not want to part with it because I love it so much. And I may just call it and be like, this is just going to be our display piece. And I may just keep floral owl. Should I sell it? Yeah. Could I sell it for more? I mean, the price tag that I plan to put on that bad boy, whoever wants it is going to better love. Well, they're going to, because they're not going to pay the price that I want to put on it. They're not going to pay unless it and just be like, meh. Yeah. They're going to love it.
Yeah.
I found that I need to also take a step back. I stop word burning sometimes. Like, I spent the past 2 weeks or so catching up on all the daggone to-do list stuff that I have been putting off because, well, I need to do that, but I can't because I need to make product for this coming up, or, you know, the certain amount of product for this coming up. So I don't have time. So it's on the to-do list. So I just took a step back, stopped burning, and did all the things on my freaking to-do list that I wanted to do. The unimportant, quote-unquote, things, right, that aren't business-related. But
then the market sneak up on you.
Yes. Well, I never said I was good at time management. I never said that. That it is partially time management. It is also about knowing, like, okay, well, we've got this market coming up, but it's not imperative that I make specialty items for this particular market. We've got a ton of product already, so we can just bring that. I may make one or two specialty things for this market, but there's, even then, I don't have to, right? It's not like it's a Mother's Day or like a very specific Mother's Day market,
or like your yoga market or something like that,
right? It's not like that where I have to, we really need specialty stuff for this particular market. I could just be like, well, we got 4 bins worth of product that we could just take and just pick and choose for, so we're good. As long as I manage my time properly, which I do not. In terms of social media, oh my god,
social media kills my love for everything. I really have to.
What I find the worst part about social media is the whole the SEO thing and the algorithm and all that. Like, if I could just post, If I could take a picture, make it nice, maybe add some video, add some music, maybe a couple stickers or whatever, bam, done. Mm-hmm. Right? And not have to sit there and think about, is it centered? Is the color right? Let me put in the correct hashtags. Mm. Is it the right time? You know, oh, well, we've got it, you know, like, and that kind of just, it's a job. And it's just, for me, it's, well, I could sit here and spend a day or two worrying about social media and that job, or I can be making the product that need to go. Mm-hmm. So what's more important? And it's just, doesn't have the other. You know what I mean? It's just like, well, which, you know, they're both important, but which one is more important right this second type of thing, right?
Hashtags are the seventh circle of hell.
Listen, I have a girl, I have a list, and I've heard people say, don't use hashtags anymore, or, you know, don't use these hashtags.
You still need to use them. You still need to use them.
Listen, I heard someone say that you don't do hashtags anymore. I was like, guess what? F you, I've got a list, and this is what we're sticking
with. Instagram literally has recently said to continue to use hashtags.
No, it was someone else. I mean, it wasn't like anybody that I cared enough to listen to. It was like, you know, you're scrolling and you come across someone, you listen for a second, and you're like, oh, that's interesting, keep it moving. It was one of those things. But I'm like, I don't really care if you say I should hashtag or not. I'm just going to use it because I'm just going to use it.
It's a feature, so you should use it.
But I think that's part of the thing, right? Because it's like, well, hashtag, to hashtag or not hashtag? What hashtags do you use?
Yeah.
Ooh, what spelling? What, you know, what this, what that? It's just like all that takes up that mental bandwidth in my head. And I'm like,
yeah.
When I get overwhelmed with that, I'm like, I'm putting that aside. I'm just going to burn.
Mm-hmm.
See, that clears my head. I'm going to burn.
Yeah. So for me, that whole side of the business is social media and marketing. And that is like a whole umbrella. And so everything social media, marketing, emails, all of that mental energy crap goes in one umbrella. And that umbrella drains me of my love of the art in the other umbrella. Because it's like, it's raining and I have to have both umbrellas. But I have to be able to like manage both umbrellas. So like, it's a lot. So that's why for me, I guess going back to the original question, like, I have to have play. And like you said, you don't necessarily have to have a different hobby because like if you are going to burn for you or do something for you, like you don't mind burning for you. Mm-hmm. I also don't mind burning for me, but it's usually for play rather than to keep. And then the other thing really is like, to kind of like, if you have an idea of something, look it up on YouTube, because YouTube is YouTube University. So like recently I bought a couple of how to draw books. One of them is Nature Drawing for Absolute Beginners. And that has been fun to go through because for me, in my head, pencil drawing, ink drawing, pen and ink drawing is very similar to wood burning in that it's mark making. Mm-hmm. You're making marks. You're not necessarily adding color. That's a whole nother thing. It's making marks. So learning how to do textures and line work and stuff is very interesting. So that's why I've gotten drawing books. But I've been going through this nature drawing book and I got stuck on the page of clouds. I cannot shade or draw realistic clouds. I don't need to because I don't do realism. I do not do realism. I have no business needing to know how to draw a cloud. But it was like almost a pride thing for me. I'm like, I cannot go on in this book until I know how to do clouds. So now I'm on like my fifth YouTube video on how to draw clouds. And I'm on page number 6 in my sketchbook of just trying to draw clouds. And that has been interesting. So it's like if you're ever like, man, I wish I knew how to draw butterflies. I wish I knew how to draw flowers. Pull up YouTube videos and start doing it for yourself because when you do it for yourself, you are telling yourself that your wishes, your desires, your inklings of wanting to grow are important. And when you push it off to the side and you don't do it, you're not investing in yourself or telling yourself that you're important. You're putting yourself on the back burner over and over and over and over and over again. So when you can finally indulge and be like, you know what? I am going to sit down and look up how to draw periwinkles. Do it and have fun with it and then paint them and then draw them and then maybe crochet them, you know, like whatever. But just going with it and like leaning into those.
Well, I mean, that's part of the like continuing education.
Exactly.
Right. It's continuing. I believe that as people to like just to live, you have to continue to grow.
Yes.
You have to continue to learn. You don't ever get to a point where I know everything I need to know. I know everything about everything about everything. You'll never get there because you'll never know everything about everything.
You always have to keep playing and exploring and discovering.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, that's part of, it's part of growth. It's part of educating. I think it is part of being an artist. Like you're saying that you were looking at pen and pencil. I think that also like chalk,
ooh,
chalk drawing. Think about the shading.
Yeah.
Like how they do the shading, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about how that pertains to how we shade. I know you don't do realism, but
the concepts are still really valuable.
Exactly. And like even you're saying, like you don't need to know how to do a cloud. Maybe not a realistic cloud, but the hand movements.
Right. It's texture. So, it is so good, yes, and cathartic, and you're still learning, even if I never need and have no desire to actually do clouds, it's still like a personal challenge for me. I'm like, I will not turn the page and go to the next page in this damn book until I have conquered the cloud. Like, I want to be able to say, I did that. I taught myself how to do that. Cool.
Clouds are stupid.
The clouds are not stupid. Clouds are Don't stupid. Say that. I mean, the other worst thing is that, like,
I cannot draw clouds. They're just impossible to draw.
I think they are impossible. Yeah, see, they're hard.
They're impossible.
This from the man who has given me enough doodles on post-its to fill a notebook.
Make a doodle a cloud.
Doodles are still drawing, okay?
This is true. I can also doodle a cloud, but I cannot, like, nicely, realistically draw a cloud in a way that I'm satisfied with.
The shading on them is so screwy.
They are wild.
It can be. But I'm just saying, like, you're always learning something, right? And then there's got to be something about learning how to do a cloud in quote-unquote realistic with the shading or whatever that will help you
down the
today
road
or in the future,
sure,
with something that you're going to do.
Right?
Because there's different ways to shade and there's different ways to contour, right? You've got hashes, you get points or whatever. That's one way to do the shading that, of course, can obviously work right into wood burning,
sure,
and shading for that. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's I guess it's all in how you look at the thing that you are learning and how it can pertain to what you need it to.
Yeah.
So how do you overcome those things that are cursory to what you do? Do you compartmentalize them to say, I'm going to do all of my marketing and non-art stuff today, and then I'm going to do all my cool art stuff that I love to do tomorrow? Do you just have to take breaks in it? Do you just shove it off to a place where you don't have to think about it and then worry about it later and make it tomorrow Zona and tomorrow Renee's problem?
Oh, no, I just simply go, it's today Brian's problem.
Well, that's probably true.
No, so like, okay, there would have been a time, probably not so long ago, where I would have said, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for this, I'll do it later, I'm too busy to play right now, I don't have time for that, like, I need to do this and this and this, I don't have time to just sit down and doodle around. But lately, I have definitely been like, I'm not going to do that today. Like, I don't know. I'm reading myself. I know myself. I know the energy. I know my mentality. I don't have the energy or the mentality for it today. I'm not going to do my best work today. Today, whatever, whatever. Or maybe I'm not feeling great today. I woke up with a headache today, whatever. Like, today's going to be a play day. And I'll just, you know, like, yes, there are things that I could be doing or that I might even should be doing. But, like, It can wait.
Fill your cup.
It can wait. Yeah, this fills my cup right now.
You have to fill your cup.
Exactly. Like, I have, like, I need to do this for me, so I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And, like, but, I mean, with the freedom comes the responsibility, too. If I have, yes. if I have the market coming up this weekend, I really do need to prioritize these things on my to-do list in order to get them done. I can still take a break and play. Yeah, I can still take a break and play, but like, I have to, you have to do both. You have to balance the responsibilities and the things that you have that are non-negotiables, but also don't burn yourself out so bad that you hate it now. That has been my thing.
Absolutely. Like, last year, I had a very serious conversation with Brian about the business in general, because mm-hmm. I had gotten to that point where I was like a toe away from being completely burned out and like, F this. We're just gonna, I'm just stepping all the way back, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, in a moment of insanity, when I'm not thinking about it, I was ready to do that. Mm-hmm. But you know, you have to step back and be like, okay, let me be an adult and not have a temper tantrum about it. Let me take a look at everything. And clearly, obviously, I can't just step back. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm not a quitter.
Yeah.
And it, to me, this is my own childhood trauma, I guess, called talking. But it's like, if I give up, quote unquote, whoever it is that told me I couldn't do it,
they win.
Has now won.
They win.
And I'm not about that life.
I hate that.
If anybody tells me I can't, it has now become my goal to not only do said thing, but do it better than they did. That is my goal. Because it's a little bit of petty. It's a lot of competitive. It's a lot of being told I had to be the best of the best of the best of the best. But I think when it boils down to it is, I can't let somebody tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. So if they tell me I can't, now I have to.
No, I have to.
But, yeah. Exactly. But, you know, but it was just like, I can't. I can't just give up. We've invested too much into the business.
Mm-hmm.
We've invested too much time. Brian has given up way too much of his time and his very little free time to do this business with me. But I had to get honest with myself and say, okay, what is it about the business that is burning me the hell out?
Mm-hmm.
And I it's getting honest and saying, I don't like mass producing the exact same thing 100 times. Like I just doing the same exact plaque 100 times. I'm done after the second time. I'm done. I don't want to do this pattern again. Probably not for like another 2 years, right? Like that's just the way I am. Like I get bored. You know, that's my boredom.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I can't do a whole lot of these. And we've had the conversation. How do we get money to come into the business on a consistent basis, right? How do we make it profitable on a day-to-day business to keep us afloat? So that I can do mm-hmm. the art that I want to do
mm-hmm.
at a market, right? And it was like, well, we have to do mass production of something so that we can sell it, so that we have the money for it. And it's like, okay, well, that's a problem because I don't want to do 100 freaking mm-hmm. plaques because I'll hate it. Not only will I hate it, I will hate wood burning. I will hate the business and I will just grow resentment. And then it's all over if I grow resentment.
Yeah, same.
So
once I hit that point of anything,
yep,
it's effed. It's exactly. done.
It's like, I'm done.
Yep. And I'm not, so it I was don't want to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to have a really serious conversation with him about it. And I said, this is what I need to stay in love with the business. I need the freedom to do the art,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I can't just mass produce this one thing mm-hmm. like a machine. Like that's just not the way that my creativity works. That is not what I love. What I love is coming up with an idea in the middle of the effing night, writing it down, writing down a word mm-hmm. on a post-it note mm-hmm. or something, and then like waking up and going, why is there a post-it note with this word on it? Oh, and then proceeding with the thought process mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna make this picture on that wood. Well, I had that piece of wood, but this is the art that I want to put on it. And then working towards that, right? Like, that's how my creativity works. And that's what keeps me fulfilled at the end of the day when I have to do the things that just mentally drain me, like mass producing the same exact thing a zillion times, right? Or doing the social media and all the politics that come with social media, mm-hmm. you know, that's what keeps me happy.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that it makes a difference if you're more selective in the work that you choose, and it gives you more of an opportunity to work on things that you enjoy working on? Or maybe even if you give yourself more creative liberty when you're taking on commission works, because then it lets you be more creative, be more artistic, as opposed to, I know, Renee, this is something you've mentioned before, that you will oftentimes be discretion, you know, use discretion when you select which commissions you want to take on.
Oh yeah, I'm picky.
And you'll use that as an opportunity to express yourself, mm-hmm. as opposed to doing something that is dictated by somebody else. Do you find that that helps to kind of keep mm-hmm. your love for the work that you're doing fresh?
Yes. I mean, I think the simple answer is yes. I think that, okay, like when we first started this business, right, it was that sprint, that beginning sprint of what can I sell to make money? What can I sell to make money? I'm just going to make all the things that will make money, mm-hmm. that could possibly make money, right? And just doing just like a ton of product, making a ton of things that you hope will sell, and then either they sell or they don't sell. But mm-hmm. it's just like, compare 3 years ago to today. Like, I would not make, I wouldn't bulk make the products like I did in the beginning. Like you said, I being more comfortable with myself as an artist, as a small business owner, with all the things that come with that, yes, I have become more selective. This is part of the conversation that we had, you know, where I said, I want to do less markets, but I want to be more selective mm-hmm. with the markets. I don't want to just sit here and do farmers markets because they are not our people. I want to do finer art projects. I want to do finer art markets and whatnot. You know, and this is what it's been every year. And like, for instance, next year, there's two fine art shows that I am drooling to mm-hmm. do. But that means that I have to literally, I have to not do markets, and I literally have to have the time to do the burn, to do the art. Mm-hmm. Like, one of them, from what I understand, is I would get a piece of a wall in a gallery to put art in.
That's awesome.
And to do that, I mean, I can't just put one little 8x10. You know what I mean? I need to put...
You need a collection.
I need a collection. I need to put things together. But what does that mean? That means I need the time. It means I need, as an artist, I need to stop and think about, you know, the subject. What is it that I want to put on there? Like, what is my theme? What does that mean? What am I going to use? How am I going to do it? How is it going to look? And I need to actually plan it. But in order to do that, I need the time.
You need the mental space. Markets. You need time. Yeah. Yep. You need the clarity.
So that it's two things. One is in the first quarter, and I think the second one is in the second quarter. But like those, that fills my cup. Mm-hmm. That makes me like drool. Like, oh my God. Even if nothing sells, to be able to make it and then put it up on a wall and have people come and see it. It's putting my name out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about putting my name out there, putting our name out there, because people are going to contact us. Like, you know this, right? And people are going to contact us and be like, well, I saw your work at such and such, da 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 da. Can you make this? Or where are you going to be next? Or I want to buy that thing from you, right? That's what it is. But it's about making the time.
Did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I just wanted to...
Oh. It is. It really... The time... it's all a juggle. It's all a juggle. And, like, we don't have kids, you know? Like, we just have dogs. We just have ourselves to worry about. But so many other artists and business owners, you know, have kids, have a family, have school, have after school, have toddler, whatever. Yeah, and it's like, that's exhausting. I don't know how you do it.
I every time I speak to an artist who's got little kids or just simply doesn't have the support of their spouse, I step back and I am baffled and confused, and then I get stressed out, and it's not even my circus to worry about. Like, I'm like, how
are you doing it?
How, when do you sleep?
Right.
Do you sleep for like a minute a night? Because I you're a wife, you're a mother, you're helping him with his business, but then you're doing your own business, right? And you're making stuff, and it's not like not that I'm demeaning it, but like crocheting or knitting where you can sit and do that, or, you know, painting or whatever. This is a woman who does her works with metal.
Right.
She's a jewelry maker. And I'm like,
excuse me.
you need to be conscious when you're playing with fire like that and you're melting metal, because hello.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm just like, so you're doing that, and I know you're up late, but then you have to get up early because you've got wife.
Yes.
You have to wife. You have to adult, right? And it's just like, but then maybe you get time to artist. And then maybe you get to do a market or a show. And I'm like, how?
I know.
How? Like, I honest to God, and I tell Brian this all the time, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to do this business without him and without his support and without his help. It just wouldn't happen. I'm either one or the other.
Yeah.
I'm either marketing or I'm making. Like, I have such a hard time doing both at the same time, or even in conjunction with the other. Like, I personally just don't work that way. Like, my mind just doesn't work that way. So I know without him doing the stuff that literally I don't want to do, or I just don't have the bandwidth to do, or the mental bandwidth to do. Like, he does the blog and the newsletters, and he does 90% of the Instagrams. I'm like losing my poop. I did a month worth of Instagram once. I sat down and I did a month worth of Instagram because it had to get done. And I sat there at the end of the day, because it took me a whole day. I was just like, oh my God, I never want to do this again. Losing my mind. Losing my freaking mind. And then I'm just like, how do people do this? And then they're like, it's not even just a post. They're doing posts. They're doing reels. They're doing stories. They're doing multiple videos. Like, I did one video and I was like, I'm done. It took me like 2 hours and I was like, oh, I can't do this. I don't have time for this. You know what I mean? And I'm like, how do they do that and that and that? And I don't.
I'd love to get somebody who does that to talk about how
how do you
what tools do they use? Do they? I mean, some of these people, I know for a fact, some of these people go hire outside help.
Mm-hmm.
But that's if you can afford it.
I don't
that's
have the money to do that.
Yeah.
No, I agree. But I'm saying that, you know, you look at some of these people and ask, how do they do it? I think some of them are investing money into outsourcing that to somebody else to do. Like, right. They just take videos, take pictures, send it over to some marketing company, and they compose all that stuff for them.
And I mean, that's great if you can afford to do that. I mean, like, I would love to hire a marketing company to just, here, what do you need? You need 30 pictures of done. Here you go. You know what I mean? And you can do the pictures and the stories and the reels and the whole nine yards, all of the social media, all of the advertising, all of the stuff I don't have time for, right? If I could hire someone to do that, that would be great. I mean, that would free you up to do other things, because you've got other things. You know, you have Brian to do, and then you have Father Brian, and then you have work Brian. Like, you have so many Brian hats on, and I'm like, I don't understand how you live. I don't understand, and I live with you.
I like hats.
You wear many hats. You like them a lot.
Yes, I like hats. You know. Okay, separate, just kind of a little divergent here.
Sure.
Do you find that other artists help to engage you in your love for doing art? You had a chance to meet Shivani. You spend time with Melissa. You spend time with Jessica. You spend time with Renee remotely. You know, you've got your groups that you're a part of. Renee, I'm sure that you have artists that you collaborate with and talk to. Do you find that that helps to... Well, I mean, you've got all of your timber doodles, right? Timber doodlers. I don't know what their plural of that is. That you engage with on a regular basis through Zoom chats and things like that. I don't know if you necessarily have a big art community locally to where you are that you can meet people, but do you find that just being able to engage with others in the community, other artists, helps to kind of rekindle that passion that you have for what you do?
Yes. You know, spending time with Melissa, who does the jewelry, I've had conversations with her about it, and I've asked the question, like, how do you make that? How do you do that? You know, and she's told me about it, and that's just fascinating to me. And it feeds my need for knowledge. It feeds my need to know, right? And it doesn't have to be directly pertaining to me, because her art, her version of art, what she does, it doesn't coincide. There's no real way for us to cross paths directly, right? Being that she's a metal worker that does jewelry, like, I can't burn on it. You know what I mean? What can I do? I can make, and I've been thinking about making, like, a bag, for instance, like a purse, a woodburn purse. I've been thinking about that. And, like, and then that could be sort of, like, a conjunction with her in terms of, like, you know, jewelry and accessories. But my art will never really coincide with hers. It will never really cross paths with her. But it's really, it's nice to step out of being a pyrographer and be in her world. Like, I was able to do that fashion show with her. And let me tell you, that was so much fun. That was part of that whole play thing for me. It was play for me. Just stepping out and, like, that was refreshing to me. That filled my cup. And that just kind of, like, gave me a chance to breathe. I was able to help her. I didn't have to think about my business. It's, what do you need? You need me to do this? I got you. You know what I mean? Like, it was her game. It was her plan. It was her circus. And I was just one of her monkeys, and I was perfectly okay with that.
Yeah.
And it made me feel good to be able to help her. It made me feel good to, like, use my other, like, skills that I learned in my, you know, all these years of working in retail and management and all that stuff. It helped me with that. That was great. But it was really nice to just work with her, you know. And then, like, with Jessica, being able to collab with her, with her pieces, like, every time, it's, I've never seen anything like this. Oh my God, I've never seen art where it's both of them. You know, it's so unique. And that's really cool to hear from random customers. Like, they're just, the love and the awe and the shock. And they're just like, wow, you know, that's refreshing also. And that helps. It's affirmation, right? This is what we like as artists. We need that affirmation that what we are doing, people like. Because that's why we do it. That's why we make the art, right? We make things that people will love, that we want people to love.
Yeah.
Right? And that affirmation that people are just like, you know, the awe and the shock and the compliments or whatever, that's affirmation to us.
Yeah.
You know, and in, you know, meeting somebody else, like meeting Shivani, she's really great, and I love spending time with her, and I really wish that we were closer together.
I know. Same state, but yet still so far.
I know. Well, we made plans. I made a commitment that we were gonna do a girls' weekend.
Amazing.
Whatever that should happen to be. Sure. We haven't. And I mean, you know, well, it'll be Vegas rules. What happens in blank place is what happens in blank place. No, we're not. We're going to talk about it all over the place. We know that. We're going to post it on Instagram. We know that. You know, David, I have a question for you.
Hi. Yes. Hello.
You know, we're talking about, like, mass production and doing a lot of the same things. How do you, like... not just be like, all right, I'm done with this. Do you ever get to that point where you're like, I'm done doing this thing?
Yeah, I need to break up my mass production days. So, like, it would be maybe technically more efficient if I saved all of my orbital sanding, like we were talking about at the beginning. Mm-hmm. All of my orbital sanding until I had just, like, 100 pieces and then just orbital sanded for 8 hours straight. Mm-hmm. That is maybe technically more efficient, but it, like, where it falls apart is that my brain just can't do that for 8 hours, and then I'll mm-hmm. get bored, and I'll go slow, or I'll start making mistakes, and it's just not worth it. So usually I break up some of it, and then, you know, my degree was in engineering, and part of the fun of engineering was figuring out how to do things the quote-unquote best way. And so I have a lot of fun, like, designing the processes that I work with. And that's usually pretty neat. And then I guess the other thing is, like, I don't necessarily need to have passion for the thing I'm doing when I'm doing it. I sometimes need to be passionate for, like, new pieces. Something we sometimes struggle with is, like, what's the next thing we're going to bring to market? Like, what's the next thing we're going to make? Trying to balance what we think might sell and also what would be fresh or new. Because sometimes it's like, boy, howdy, I've cut a square out of every piece of wood I can find. like,
David, do you consider what you do more art or more engineering?
I don't consider any of what I do really art until we start getting into, like, the one-off type of things. The really fine woodworking stuff. I think some of it's engineering. I think a lot of it is just process management.
A manufacturer.
Yeah, I'm just a manufacturer.
They're never going to give you an artist badge with that attitude.
They aren't, but, like, so, okay. Something that I did consider to be art was, and it's been on the Instagram, so, like, the world can maybe envision this. The Renee's Alligator River piece, which has the bear on it, has a curved frame around the outside of it. And that curve is, and I know because I made it, is perfectly matched to the curve of the bear, of the bear's piece itself. And, like, that was a really technically challenging, but also, like, I'm very pleased with how it came out. I laminated and bent the frame pieces from smaller stock so that it looks like a single piece. And the grain flows with the curve instead of being, like, constantly running out of the curve as it would be if I cut it out of a bigger piece of wood. And then also it's got sycamore as its back, because it's in kind of like that shadow box frame. The back is made out of sycamore, and I really took the time to line up the grain of the sycamore because I knew it would show through, so that, like, all of that grain is matching and kind of looks organic. It doesn't look all busted up.
You've said before you consider that, like, your fine craftsman skills rather than art.
Yeah.
Because you've said before, like, nothing about what I do is art. You've said that before. Is that still
that
how
is
you feel?
So wrong.
I don't know. So, like, here's the thing. I think sometimes it's art and sometimes it's not. The line in just in working in woodworking with functional type of work is really blurry between, like, fine craftsmanship and when you start to approach art. It doesn't matter so much to me that it be specifically considered art. There's, like, a guy, I'm going to mess up his name, and that's a shame because I don't know that he's alive anymore. Sam Mamoot, I think. Anyway, he's, like, a super famous fine woodworker who made rocking chairs and, like, took the world by storm of fine furniture when his rocking chair designs hit the market. But at the end of his career, he was just making the same chair. They were really, really well made, but he had, like, one good idea and then just kept executing it excellent.
Is it Sam Maloof?
Maloof. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are really cool. I just looked them up. Look at that design.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But you're saying he like came up with the design once and then just did it over and over again? Like there wasn't any...
I don't know his exact process. There's so much expertise that goes into like picking the grain and doing the work of some of that and like seeing the curves of the chair because they're very organically curved. But like if he's made 100 of those chairs, like they got to be old hat at some point. You know what I mean? Like it's not like an individual painting every time.
Well, I get what you're saying, but I guess I look at wood pieces, whether it's, you know, a hand-carved armoire, right? Mm-hmm. Or...
we got it up.
Yeah. You know, a nice piece of furniture, right? And I can see the beauty in it, and I can see the art of it. And I've heard woodworkers talk about the grain and the curve and all these things, and it's like, it's very similar to what artists will talk about when they talk about their paintings, right? And they talk about brush strokes and all this. And it's, I don't know. I think that woodworking as a craft, not just I'm going to stick two pieces of 2x4s together and call it a shelf, right? I'm talking like someone who takes the time and the effort, the heart to make something, to like really, really make something. See, I think that that's artistic. But, I mean, it could also be the fact that I just love... I like things that when you work with your hands, anything that's handmade, I have a love for it.
There's a clarity of vision and voice that I think goes into art pieces of all media that woodworking has frequently. But there's also... Because at the end of the day, a table needs to have a flat top and four legs or some number of legs. It needs to not fall over, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's very easy to lose some of that clarity of vision in the mass production of some of these things. Like a lot of the one-offs, Felicity's box I would consider in my art realm of woodworking.
Absolutely.
And that was something that like I was very intentional at every step of that process. And don't get me wrong, any timberdoodles that are listening, like I'm intentional when I drill the hole on your ornaments to make sure the grain looks the best way to me, but it's not quite the same thing as like when I'm making 100 of those versus when I'm making one of something. The line blurs for me personally.
Well, in terms of like, I'm just curious, like when you were talking about bending the strips, right, and creating that arc. From what I understand of engineering, with my limited typical knowledge of engineering, would you say that like the things that you learned as an engineer, do you think that that helped you with coming up with the plan for making that piece? Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, so you had to think about making the arch. So I'm assuming there's a degree in the arch and how to glue the pieces together. And you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, did it help with that?
So yes and no. I was disappointed in my engineering degree ultimately because...
Oh, well, that's true. You told me about that.
Most modern engineering is chasing like minuscule efficiency bonuses for profit. And you're not really doing the inventing that really scratches that itch in my brain. But there was plenty of mentors throughout my engineering schooling that taught me some of those skills. One of them, I really appreciated one of the things he said was like, you know, you can spend all day designing, which is valuable. It's worth doing. But when you go to build, he was talking about building, but he was like, when you go to build a boat, you build to the nearest boat. You don't have to worry about the degrees of like how close your inching tolerances are, things like that. Like at the end of the day, you need to have a boat. You can be within a thousandth of an inch of your designs, but if it doesn't float, it doesn't work. And so like,
That's an interesting way to think about it.
And so like, you know, I think part of Renee's struggle with social media has always been, she's looking for the perfect guaranteed thing. Like without any uncertainty in it, that'll just, like, will guarantee sales. This will work.
It doesn't exist. It's a...
Yeah. And so, like, sometimes we go back and forth, and I feel bad because I just don't understand what's bothering her about it so much, because I'm like, just do a thing. You need to make a post. Like, it doesn't need to be the perfect post today. Just, like, a post.
There's so much psychology that goes into it.
Yeah, she's muttering about psychology and how I'm wrong over here. Which is...
Well, she's not wrong. There's absolutely psychology that goes into it. And I think it's a matter of finding that line, because that it's a moving target. And this week, something is going to perform well that is going to perform horribly next week, because fickle customers, because the Google and Apple and Facebook and all of them changing their SEO policies, and just I don't know what direction the wind is blowing. It's gonna change. So that perfect algorithm that you figured out this week that scored you know, a 100,000 hits next week may not get you more than a dozen. You know, it's just, it's so hard to be able to chase that MacGuffin down.
Yeah. Yep. So I don't know. To me, we push and pull against each other sometimes, because Renee has very high standards, and it's not that I have low standards, but I also, like, there's a part of me that has, I have a better idea of where my own good enough is, I think. Which is not necessarily, when we were different people, it's not that one's wrong and the other's right, I just...
Yeah, like, but when you were raised... and grew up with the kind of the ultimatum of do it right the first time, and that carries over into your adult life, then you become afraid of making mistakes, of doing it wrong, of wasting time, of, you know, not doing it right the first time. So, like, it becomes paralyzing sometimes. It's like, well, I don't even know what to do because I don't want to do it wrong. And there's this whole school of thought for marketing psychology and stuff that it's quality over quantity. So I would rather put out one really good reel that hits with my audience, that sparks comments and conversation and shares, rather than posting 7 half-assed reels and just pumping something out just to pump it out. Like, don't put out shitty material, put out good material. But if that means you only have one reel a week, then that's all it means. So it's like, okay, I don't want to just post just for the sake of posting. You know, I want to have intentionality behind this, and I want this to be on brand, and I want it to reach my target audience. I want to connect with my audience, and I want that engagement. Okay, but I don't have the bandwidth to do that today, and I didn't have the bandwidth to do it yesterday, and I probably won't have the bandwidth to do it tomorrow. So I'm just not going to do a post, because I'd rather do it right the first time than F it up. You know, I would almost rather not post at all than post a half-assed post.
And at the end of the day, you're both right. Right? Yes. That what you're saying, Renee, 100%, that is a great way to ensure brand quality. That is the great way to ensure that your customers know exactly what they're going to expect and they get it. But to David's point, I've heard this from many people that just getting something out there is better than not getting anything out there at all. Yep. So, you know,
so many things.
It does. And there is no right answer. Right. And I think that's the problem, is that, you know, the longer that you search for that right answer, you're going to realize that somebody's going to come and say, you know, well, you know, I've read this one study that said that this is actually the better way to do it. And it's just endless, because there's just so much information out there. So I think you just pick a strategy and you stick with it. And that's your strategy, and you stick with it. And it ensures at the very least consistency in what you're delivering.
Well, it you create a brand by doing that, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, well, I know, like, when you do your stories, like, for instance, right? Like, I know when I pop onto IG and I see that little pretty little circle around you, I'm like, ooh, so Renee's got stories. What's Renee up to now? And then it's like, I expect funny conversations and quips and boopable noses and, you know, and pretty product. And, like, there's a thing that I know that you're going to give your audience, mm-hmm. that is David and Renee,
yeah.
right? And then, like, I go to somebody else's IG, and it's just like, well, okay, I know that particular person that I follow, this is what they always give. They give, it's just pictures, but they're pretty and whatever, but that's what they give. Mm-hmm. Like, that is their, quote unquote, lack of a better term, that's their brand. Mm-hmm. But that's what I've come to expect. Like, if they put up a reel, I think I'd have a heart attack. Like, wait, what? You know, mm-hmm. it's, you come to expect something. And, I mean, I would like
consistency.
It is consistency. Yeah. And I, you know, they talk about, I forgot who I was listening to. They were talking about branding and whatnot, and I have to remember to face the microphone. They talk about, you know, it is come up with your brand, which is your colors and your schemes. And
oh,
your,
it's so much more than that.
I'm simplifying, but it's just you come up with your quote unquote brand and whatever and whatnot. And then the next thing they say is, like, be consistent. If you're only going to post once a week,
mm-hmm.
then commit to once a week, but make sure you post once a mm-hmm. week. So it's one really good reel once a week, then that's fine. Make it a good one, and that's all you have to do for that one week, and that's what you've committed to. And that could be a lot easier for someone than trying to commit to, holy crap, 7 days, I've got to come up with 7 reels or 7 posts or 7 stories, and you're like, the F am I going to do? You know, what is this set of stuff? What is this posting? Is it going to be a series of 3, 7, 10, 14, 20? Like, what is it going to be? What am I posting? And then having to do all the things that mean posting, right? Songs and not songs, captions or no captions, a reel or no reel, and then it's like the colors and oh Jesus Christ, and hashtags and all the things that it means to be into social media, right?
So I'm gonna reel it back in from social media with another question. So and this is Renee and Zona for both of you. Mm-hmm. So if someone is feeling like they're not connecting with their art,
mm-hmm.
what would be your recommendation to get them to re-engage and reignite that passion that they had when they first started doing whatever art it is that they do?
Ooh, this is such a loaded question. It's a good question, but it's a loaded question. Number one, it depends on the person. It depends on who I'm talking to. I know. It depends on the person. But I can tell you things that have worked for me. And I would spitball ideas to see where that conversation with this hypothetical person would go. So for me, things that have reconnected me with my art, the play, the exploration. But what does that actually mean? That means I'm going to work with this box of colored pencils that I haven't touched in 2.5 years. And I'm going to sit down and just do something with it. So pulling out old art media, pulling out old art supplies, and doing something seemingly unrelated to your current art practice. You know, see what you can do with old art supplies that you have laying around and just mix it up. Another thing that has really worked well for me is my iPad is Procreate. So I can do so many different things on Procreate than you can with physical art materials. So I am always doodling in Procreate, just all sorts of stuff. And a lot of it doesn't come to anything. Like, I don't make money on it. But I have so many designs and cute doodles and all sorts of stuff in Procreate that I just do just for fun. But the way that I find things to do for fun, like, where do I even get my ideas? YouTube, easy Procreate tutorials. and Skillshare. I love my Skillshare membership, and I use it almost exclusively for Procreate nowadays, where I have the creative bug, but I don't really want to do anything physical. I don't want to sit at my desk. I also don't want to wood burn. Let me just look at like the top trending Procreate classes in Skillshare. And that has been really, really valuable because I'm learning new things that I can turn around and then use later on to create stickers or cards or whatever. Like, how else would I have known how to turn my Moodang into a sticker? Like, I've taken Procreate classes before, so now that skill transfers. But it's not just doing something that is a skill that I can monetize later. It was just actually fun to sit down and make watercolor stickers in a Procreate class one day. So, like, that's something that rekindled me to my art. And then the other thing that I've already talked about is my sketchbook. That practice has been so helpful, but it's also having a brand new sketchbook and you're like, okay, what do I even do? What do I sketch? What, like, how do I get ideas? Pinterest, like, even just looking on Pinterest for like easy doodle ideas. There are so many things that you can just pick up a pen and pencil and just start doodling or coloring or drawing or whatever. And then the other one that I've been really into lately is actually buying art books. So like my an intro to nature drawing for the absolute beginner, that book has been fantastic. I got a book recently on composition because I'm a self-taught artist. I never took art classes. I only know what I know when it comes to designing my compositions, but there's so much more to it that I just don't even know. So I bought a book on mastering compositions, and now I'm teaching myself how your eye follows the elements in your art and how you can use that to evoke feelings and how you can use movement and line work and color gradients to move your eye and to make your compositions a lot more engaging or more powerful. And like I said, those are skills that I don't have because I'm just self-taught. How am I ever going to learn if I don't teach myself? So that book has been really great. And then I got another book recently on pen and ink drawings for like creative textures. I don't do pen and ink, but I am using that for my wood burning because there's so much that I can learn from that I can use later. But it's also cool to just learn about another art media. But so like, if this is a conversation, Brian, back to what you were saying, like, what would I say to someone? Well, I'd be like, well, do you have an iPad? Okay, if you have an iPad, there's this cool Procreate Skillshare class. There's this cool Procreate YouTube channel. Do that. So like, pick a night one night, pop some popcorn, turn on your show, and like sit down with your iPad and do that. Like, that could be a really good way to disconnect and reconnect. Or if they're like, man, I really used to love my oil pastels, but I haven't touched them in 5 years. Girl, then go do that. Pull out your oil pastels and rekindle that fire. Like, sit down and do it. Oh, I love photography, but I haven't touched my camera in 2 years. Pull it out and go take some pictures of the leaves in your backyard. Like, there are so many ways that you can rekindle your love of your art form without it being your immediate art form, but it depends on the person. You know what I mean?
I'm just surprised you haven't mentioned it yet, Renee. What? But when you're in an artist slump, when you're feeling burned out with the business and art in general, it's like, well, I got to go find a pretty patch of woods to let Renee walk around and look for things.
Oh, this is so true. I have to be outside. Like, if I see the inside of my house too much, I am sad. I have to be outside. I either have to be in the yard, I need to be in a garden, I need to be on a hike, even just a pretty drive around, like, freaking Perry County is pretty. It's so pretty. But, like, actually touching grass is very helpful for me, and seeing the things that I love to make in my art, you know, nature related things, bugs, bees, flowers, going and actually seeing those things in real life. Amazing. Like, we could go to Longwood Gardens and I have inspiration for the next 6 months. Like, oh, you know, like I love it so much. It just fuels my fire. And that is completely un-art related. That's just my own personal thing that I love to do, that I need to do. Yeah. Plus, I also, I just get so cranky.
It's funny.
I need to touch grass.
You mentioned the going and using some of the tools that you maybe haven't touched in a while. Mm-hmm. And when the boys were younger, when Matthew and CJ were younger, they used to have toys that they would not play with. So what I would do is I was intentionally put their toys in the attic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that they would forget about them. And then when you would take them back out, it would they'd be interesting again.
Yes.
And it kind of kept them engaged. Whereas if they just all sat around their house, they would never be interested in them again because they'd see them every day. And it almost sounds like a similar scenario where by going back and touching those tools again and trying those different mediums that you maybe haven't touched in a while helps to keep you keep things interesting and keep things from becoming too dull and repetitive. Mm-hmm. And being more about the art and the creative process.
The whole thing with the putting the toys in the attic, this is actually a very good skill to do as parents, especially with littles, because we tend to have so many toys for our kids. Like, we overconsume so much as a nation. Our houses are full of toys to where it's overstimulating for kids. So it's really good to only have a few toys out at a time and to rotate them. Because when you have a toy room full of toys, the psychology of it is too overstimulating. Yeah, it's like if you have a closet full of clothes, you're like, well, I don't know what to wear. Well, you're overstimulated. You have too many options. You don't even know what you want or what there is. So, like, give your kids, like, 10 toys. Go put the others up and then rotate them every month.
It's one of the reasons why I hate going to restaurants with Zona that have huge menus.
Mm, I feel that. I feel that. It's like, I don't know what I
want.
I'd
rather them have, like, 8 options to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny when we go into a restaurant now and, like, we'll see the menu. And I will look through everything and, like, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, from this column or whatever, this looks interesting to me. I like this, mm-hmm. right? And I'll be sitting there, and, like, him and the kids are, like, they know what they want. Done. And then the waitress is coming over, and she's like, oh, are you guys ready? I'm like, no, I still need time. And they're all just looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian will be like, it's just way too many choices for you. That's the problem.
And I'm like, when they go to Cheesecake Factory, and they hand her that Necrocomicon of a menu that they have.
And then it's funny because he says to me, I don't even know why you're looking at the menu when you know exactly what it is that you're going to get. Because I'll generally get one of the two things that I like anyway. Mm-hmm. But I always like to look because in my head I'm like, well, what if there's something new that
What if there's something that
try?
I've never had before?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And maybe today's that day that I want to try
Exactly.
It. And then he goes, I don't know why you even look mm-hmm. at it because you know you're going to get
I know anyway. I'm going to get the grilled cheese. Like, why am I even looking at burgers? I don't, but like, what if there's something that sounds really good that could outweigh
exactly.
the grilled cheese?
Exactly.
You see, exactly. Yeah, I think we have the same brain.
You know what, babe? Speaking of that, I'm surprised that you didn't mention yesterday. We went out to dinner yesterday at a restaurant. It's a pizza place. And the kids and him usually get the buffet, the pizza buffet. And I have to look at the menu, even though I know I'm going to get one of three possible things. Mm-hmm. So we walk in yesterday, and we haven't even sat down yet. And the waitress is just like, well, what are you guys getting? And they're like, oh, we're going to get the buffet. And she looks at me. Clearly, she knows me, too. She's like, do you need a menu this time? I was like, nope, I don't need a menu. I know exactly what I'm getting. Like, and they didn't even say anything. Like, Brian didn't even know.
So
I was just like, I knew.
Yes.
I was like, I was like, you know what? I don't even want to look at the menu. I know exactly what I was going to have. That was a little pat on the back for me that I was able to achieve said thing.
Yay.
So I, you did not get a chance to answer my question from earlier, which was, what would you say to somebody who feels like they've need to rekindle their love for art? What would you tell them to do to get that passion back?
For me, it's, I need to step away. Like, I need to just take a break and not art, right? Even if it's for like a day or two, I will just not art. Mm-hmm. I will, but see, the other problem, well, not the problem, it's just like in my head, I've got this running list of to-do, honey-do things that I have put on my back burner that need to get done, right? Like, I'll have this list of 10 things, and over the past 2 months, I've kept adding things and adding things and adding this to the list. So when I get to that point where I'm just, where I look at my burner, I'm like, I know I have to burn, but I'm just not in the mood. I'm just not feeling it. I'm not loving it. I'm hating it. I'm 2 seconds away from throwing out the damn thing. When I get to that point, I just won't. I just won't burn because I don't have to. At the end of the day, I don't have to. Even if I have a custom, I don't have to burn today, right? And so what I personally will do is I will step away from art and I'll tackle some of the things that are on my honey-do list, right? Or I will do something differently creative. Like, I made acrylic boxes. I rearranged some of the things in the studio, in the garage, and I needed to put my acrylic paints in something because what they were in wasn't going to fit where I wanted to put it. So I sat there one day and I created boxes that stacked together for my acrylic paints, and that was what I did. And I mean, you can call it art, you can call it crafting, whatever, but that's what I did to just like to step away. For me I just needed to step away. I needed to take a break and just not do something work related. Like, I'm not burning because I have to. I'm not burning because I've got a custom. I'm not doing this thing because I have to, because it's work. I'm just doing this thing because I have to get it done and it's something that I've put off, or just something that just spurs me in that one moment. Like, I didn't wake up thinking I'm going to make boxes for my acrylic paint. I just looked at it and said, well, hey, I can just make boxes. This sounds like fun. Let me try this. Let me practice this. Because I may need this skill at some point, at least now when I have a minute to breathe, I can use that. As a matter of fact, I do have a use for the boxes. But whatever. But that's how I need to stop doing whatever it is for a minute and then do something else. And then eventually it clears my mind. So in my head, even though I'm working on something, I will be thinking about 1,000 different things. And then at some point, it always happens, like, I'll be thinking about making boxes. And then it'll be like, oh, wait, I could put this in the box. I could put ornaments in the box. Ooh, okay, so ornaments. What kind of ornaments? What can I put in it? What can the box be? Mm-hmm. And then it spurs me back into wanting to burn. But now I have something to intrigue me, something that turns my creative gears versus just the mundane. So that's, for me, that's how I get back into the love. I when I start feeling myself hating it, or not hating it, but just like not being interested in it, I just stop. I take a break and I just don't.
Well, and so for some people that break might be a day or a week, but for other people it might be 6 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever life throws at you, whatever, that you feel like you need to step away from. Everyone's time is going to look different.
Absolutely. It's whatever it means for you, right? Like, I know somebody who does fantastic work and she posted that she was going to take a break, and it's been, I haven't seen her post anything for over a year now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's arting, but I know that she hasn't posted anything. she's taking a break for her family. She was taking a break for herself. It absolutely didn't mean that she was quitting, just that she needed to do something that wasn't art related for her. So
any closing thoughts that you have on the love of doing the art?
I mean, ultimately, you're going to know yourself better than anyone else does. So if you feel like you need a break, you need a break. If you feel like you need a step away, you need a step away. You don't need to be doing what I'm telling you to do or what Zona's telling you to do. Like, if you need to take a break or do this for you, then do that. Do that for you. But also don't be afraid or don't be shy about trying other avenues for said break. But yeah, I guess that's my closing thing. You got to do what you got to do for you. So,
I mean,
you do what you got to do.
I think I'm a big proponent of follow your gut. I mean, I know a lot of people can argue the whole quote unquote gut feeling thing, right? And following that, they don't believe in gut feelings. I know you do, but like I have found with the passing of my time in my life, as I've gotten older, that, you know, when I was young, people pleaser, and I had to do what I thought other people wanted me to do, right, at the end of it. And it just burnt me out on a lot of different levels. As I've gotten older, I just follow my gut. Okay, well, this job does not seem like it's going to be a fit for me, so I'm not going to do it. I mean, does it pay a lot of money and could I use it? Absolutely. But will I be happy? Mm-hmm. Will I be content? I follow my gut. You know, when I meet somebody and it's just like, do I like this person? Do I not like this person? I'm going to follow my gut. And I think when you've come down to a point where you're burning out, your love of what you do, your art is burning out, follow your gut. If your gut is telling you to step away from that piece and just breathe, do that. I think that's really important. Follow your gut will tell you, right, what to do. And like your mind will tell you, okay, well, instead of burning today, instead of painting today, I'm gonna pull out my pastels. I'm gonna try my hand at making a coaster. I'm gonna pull out my carving, wood carving tools and try carving a little picture into this piece of wood. Whatever it is, right? Something's telling you to try this other thing or not do this thing or do this other thing, right? Follow your gut. No, that's...
You know, I got talking about engineering earlier, but this is such an engineering thing to do. We had like 3 class periods at one point that were dedicated to like learning how to brainstorm properly. Because apparently there is a proper way. I don't know. But
that's interesting. I'd love to hear the theory on that.
Well, so what it really boils down to for a lot of people, I'm going to loop it back to art here, in that I think brainstorming is creative and probably scratches a similar itch that creating, like, when somebody wants to be creative, I feel like there's a certain like section of your brain that you're trying to get that good dopamine hit at. And I think for engineers, brainstorming, you know, crazy, weird new machines and things is like their sort of way of getting to that same dopamine hit. But they said, like, most people aren't in a position to be creative, like, cold at the drop of a hat. Like, you got to warm up into it. And so, like, for a lot of our brainstorming sessions with group projects, they were like, listen, you're going to spend time just thinking of ways to solve some ridiculous, absurd problem until you're having fun and your brain is, like, in the, like, good dopamine space of I'm enjoying creating new ideas. And so I feel like, you know, you guys are going back and forth saying about, like, we'll try different media and things like that. I really think it's just, like, play around, try to get that, like, creative hit on your brain again with whatever, and then usually that's enough to, like,
don't know. In engineering, they're like, if you can do it, then you can, like, shunt that energy into the productive thing instead of the non-productive play. But you don't have to be quite so robotic about it for art as I think for engineering was trying to make it be.
I think it's interesting that you say that, because my feeling is that a lot of people are afraid to try different things, because I want to be the best pyrographer I can be, so I'm going to spend my time doing pyrography, because the only way I'm going to be able to get better at it is by doing it. Mm-hmm. And so you feel like if you divert your attention to other things, you're not investing in the thing that you want to do as a profession. You're not investing in the thing that you want to improve at. And I think it's important to remember that, and Renee, you touched a little bit on this before when you were talking about drawing and making marks, that all of these skills are transferable. Mm-hmm. I do digital art, and I've seen people who are first-time digital artists who make amazing pieces because they've just learned how to use the tools, but they've been able to apply all of the techniques that they've learned from traditional media, from traditional art, and apply that to digital art. And once they understand how to use the tools, they're able to create things that are better than people who have been working in this medium for years sometimes. Yeah. So I think it's just important to remember that when you're going and you're diverting your attention to something other than the core art that you're doing, you're not wasting time. You're not losing time. You're not investing time in something that's not going to improve you mm-hmm. in what it is that you do.
Yeah.
This is all stuff that's going to, you're going to see a return on it. Everything that you do is an investment in yourself as an artist.
Absolutely.
So, I think that is it. I want to leave a little time for plugs. So, we do have a plug this time. Yeah. It's blanks. Earring blanks. So we posted a media post. So we are now going to be creating earring blanks. So recently this year, we've started making earrings for BZ Furfur and selling them at markets, and people absolutely love them. So David and Renee have so graciously offered to supply us with some templates that we can use to use our laser burner to make some beautiful earring shapes. And you can buy those through BZ Furfur. I don't know if we're going to have the links up by the time this podcast comes out, but if that is something that you're interested in, if you want to...
Damn us.
Yeah. If you want to burn on beautiful wood and make earrings...
And pendants,
then we can definitely hook you up. So really hoping that that's going to be something that people are going to enjoy. I know we've... I've been doing this for a little while now, and we found that burning on the high quality woods has made a significant difference, both in our personal experience working on them in terms of the smell and the overall look, and the end product is just so much better. So yeah, as Zona said, DM us, let us know if that's something that you're interested in, and we'll work something out with you. And with that, David and Renee, any plugs?
I don't know that we've got anything super spectacular.
Just the same old Timberdoodle Retreat.
So, yeah, same old Timberdoodle Retreat.
Still, is there still spots open in the Timberdoodle Retreat?
Yes. There's...
At least three.
Yeah, at least three.
You heard that.
At least three spots.
So everybody out there who has at least less than three people.
Well, we're going to be booking the house soon. probably at
crumpets await.
The curve of the new year, the start of the new year, we're going to be putting the down payment on the house.
Yeah.
On the rental.
That, for the record, is going to be basically just a week of how Renee stays in love with wood burning. Which we're just going to be playing with art and...
Okay, so the whole thing with the timber...
Touching grass,
shaking ass, all of that. The Timber Doodle Retreat, I want to share... So it's in, we're going to be right outside of Shenandoah National Park, and we will be doing most of our outdoor adventuring in Shenandoah National Park. And I absolutely love that park. It is my most visited national park. I've been there so many times, and I know a lot about it. David knows a lot about it. We know the flora and fauna. We know what's in... not in season, but like what is blooming. You're like, what is that flower? David, Renee, what is this flower? Oh, we can tell you what that is. Like we know the things, and that is such a huge source of inspiration for me. And I want to share that and the way that I use that to create art with other people. So it's not just going to be, let's go take a hike. It's going to be, okay, today we are going to be thinking about like composition, for example. Here are some basic 101 points on designing a composition. What does that actually mean? Because I know a lot of the timber doodlers, one thing that I've heard people say before is people want to know how to design their own things, their own, instead of looking for templates or trying to come up with something on their own based on the internet, like how can I design this? And so I have some things I'm learning about composition in a way that I can teach it. We're going to go out in the field today. We're going to go on this hike on this trail, and I'm going to show you how I can combine this, this, and this to create this composition. And now I want you to do the same thing. And I want to see other people's processes come alive. I want to see what inspires them. And I want it to be like a full kumbaya moment for everyone. So that's just one example. Like, in Shenandoah National Park, the highway runs through it. Well, it's not a highway. I guess it's more of a... the main street, the main road is Skyline Drive, and that is up on the mountains. And so it is just full of overlooks at, like, every mile marker. And so one thing that I want to do is I want to make these... it's basically like a viewfinder. I want to make a little viewfinder card for everyone, and we're going to stop at multiple overlooks, and we're going to use it to frame out the mountainscapes to create a composition based on what we're actually seeing. We're going to do that at multiple points along the road. So like that is a huge source of inspiration for me that I get to share with other people in a practical way that actually helps people with their art journey, with their art skills. So That's what you can expect for the Timber Doodle Retreat. And then lots of games and lots of probably sweets, because I have a sweet tooth, and lots of laughing and probably some campfires. So it'll be great.
Well, I mean,
I hope.
Are you guys going to like bring a sketchbook so you guys can sketch?
Oh, that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone's going to get a sketchbook. So everybody is going to get a little goodie bag. And I already have some things that I know that are going in the goodie bag. And one of the things is everyone's getting their own extra large sketchbook. Yep. And I'm going to show you how to use it and to tear it up. And to actually, like, don't be afraid of the blank page. We're actually going to sketch in our sketchbook. Wild. Crazy. Absolutely unhinged.
Use promo code touching grass shaking ass.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Well,
anyway.
One quick note. So what I'm also hearing is that the Timber Doodle Retreat is David's finding a pretty patch of trees for you to look at and play in.
Yeah. I mean, my job is not going to be how to get this art onto the page. My job is going to get you feeling good and creative and enjoying yourself.
Inspired.
And I guess to keep you alive and fed.
That's a good thing.
And warm.
David loves
with fire.
So he's going to be the cook for all of the meals. He has a list of recipes he's trying out. Like, y'all are going to be eating good during the Timber Doodle Retreat. It's going to be great.
I think in the goodie bag there should be like a David's recipe book.
Mm.
That would... Renee's overselling because they're not written down
anyway.
They're
not written down. I was going to say, that would require you actually writing them down, whereas they're just in his head right now, but...
Well, with that, I want to thank everybody for sticking with us till the end here. As always, we are BZ Furfur on Instagram. It's BZ underscore Furfur. It's David and Renee. It's at It's David and Renee on Instagram. And the podcast is at Pyro Toasty Talks. You can also find us on the interwebs at www.pyrotoastytalks.com. And as always, stay toasty.
Stay toasty.
Stay toasty.